This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Nice play to Hronek through the middle, and he'll fire it right wing to center for Bluger. Into the Anaheim zone. Teddy Bluger near circle, got a shot, he scores! Hoglander's got it at the left circle. There's a crowd of bodies in the crease. Soucy tries a one-timer right side. He scores!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Hronek clears it high in the air to center. Knocked down by Brett Leeson. Driving right wing into the Vancouver end. Left boards for Lundestrom for the goal. Shot stopped by Lankinen, but they score on the rebound. As Brian Dumoulin crashing the crease, chips it past the fallen Vancouver netminder through the middle, and the Ducks make it a one-goal game. It's 3-2.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks edge the Ducks 3-2 at Rogers Arena. Big win for the Canucks as they try to stay in the playoff race in the Western Conference. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. You can get in touch with us on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also call 604-280-0650. And when it comes to what we saw here tonight from the Canucks, I thought it was a really strong performance. First period was really strong. Unlucky not to be up 1-0 in this game. Anaheim got the first goal. You wondered, how will this team that has been fragile at times respond? They responded well. They took over the game in the second period. Ducks made it close by scoring that goal in the third. But this was a game, Randy, where for the most part, the Canucks looked in control. And, you know, we talk oftentimes about ways to generate more offense and what this team can do to perform better. And sometimes it's just simple things. Skate hard, go to the middle of the ice, play with some urgency, and the next thing you know, you play some pretty good hockey.
And the key word you said there was urgency. The first shift of the game, Connor Garland attacking down the left-hand side, hits the crossbar, excellent job. And then Elias Pettersson, Dakota Joshua Garland, they're out there for three straight whistles. Rick Tocchet saw that they were feeling good. They brought that energy right off the bat. And that's exactly what you want to see from that group, your leaders. And, guys, you know, this is a game. I'm sure you guys are going to talk about Elias Pettersson. But as a collective, I thought this was a hungry group. And Jake DeBrusk mentioned that with you, Bick, during the intermission. You could see that, especially in that second period where they fell behind. They didn't sag. They came back. They scored goals and were very direct in their first goal as well. And it's exactly what you want to see from a group that played well in the first period, didn't get that goal, but they came out throwing haymakers in the second.
Absolutely necessary to show this level of desperation. I still think there's a couple more notches they can go more, but all this conversation of, hey, embrace these 22 games, play like you want to go to the playoffs, and we haven't seen a level of urgency or desperation from them. And that road trip emphasized that. It just looked lackluster heading to this deadline of, all right, this is how it's going to sag out. So if you want to be here, if you're fighting for a contract, if you want to go to the playoffs, you got to show a level of desperation. And, hey, tonight, full credit. Like, it was very evident throughout the course of this game. They were very unlucky in that first period to be down. If you told me what period they had scored the three goals in, you would have obviously said the first period with the 17, 18 shots on goal. And then they get the rewards in the second period. So credit to them. But you need to see this level of desperation here. Because if you're doing things to go, if you're building this mindset of, hey, we have to go to the playoffs and we want to do have some success there, you got to start playing with a certain level of urgency now rather than assuming you're going to get there.
Yeah, and Batch and I talked about it before the game. It was one of the keys of you got to meet that pressure, right? Rick Tocchet mentioned it pregame. He talked to Batch about it in the one-on-one. Where are you going to meet? Is it going to be a playoff type of intensity? In the first period, we saw that. And they came out with that speed. They came out with that jump. And you hit the post. You see an unbelievable save from John Gibson on Brock Besser there. And, you know, on other nights, maybe you fall behind and say, oh, here it goes again. No, this team brought it in the second period. And that's a good start to this homestand.
Well, and, you know, we talk a lot about how this Canucks team, especially now without JT, and it's clear that they're, and Hughes being out too, they do lack some higher-end talent. It has to be replaced by effort. And it's hard for you to play at a 9 to 10 on the effort scale for 82 games, but you have 21 after tonight now. Like, this is, you have to leave it all out there, you know? And I want to be encouraged. I want to see them build on this. We'll see what happens by the deadline here on Friday and how they perform against the Wild on Friday and how they carry this over. So I hope it's what we see carrying over. But this is what they have to do. They have to play at this type of effort level from this point out. They're simply not deep enough, talented enough, to play at a 75-80% level. It has to be like 95-99%, play as hard as you possibly can, and you have to fight for ice. They did that tonight. You saw even on the power play goal was off the rush.
Yep.
What, you know, quick up the ice, Besser is driving, DeBrusk goes down the middle, that's how he scores, right? Besser had a great chance in the first period, driving down the middle. Everything was down the middle for the Canucks tonight, and that made a big difference.
For sure it did, and I think, you know, looking at the contributors as well, when you have those three goals, of course, you get Jake DeBrusk on the power play, you mentioned quick attack, great recognition by Filip Peronik, but an excellent play by Brock Besser as well to hit DeBrusk in stride. But then you've got, you know, Teddy Bluger, and that second goal of the game for the Canucks, it was key because Anaheim was bringing that pressure on that shift. You had the fourth line out there, Sherwood and Hoglander get off, and Bluger just extends that shift, and he gets room in the middle of the ice, Sat, and he takes the shot, and it takes a slight deflection off of Jackson Lacombe.
Yeah.
I think it was off the shin, and it threw off John Gibson just enough to get that goal, but that was a key moment where that ice is in front of Bluger. He could probably peel off, dump it in,
but
there, it's in front of him. He takes it, and they have that 2-1 lead, and that's really gave him confidence heading into that second half of that second period.
Yeah, that goal in particular, too, just I like what Lekkomäki did on that play, too, because he tucks in behind Lacombe and forces Lacombe to go with them, opening up a little bit of space for Bluger to get that shot off. You know, a player who maybe wants to get on that puck kind of hovers closer to Bluger, waiting for a pass. He tries to create space for his teammate and gets it off that shooting opportunity. Yeah, but just in general, like the directness that they played. We obviously, Sat, you mentioned the a DeBrusk goal, even the Soucy goal. There's two guys going to the net. Yeah, they're propelled and pushed into the crease.
They're
into
going
the net,
to the middle,
They're going to the middle, and space opens up. Hoglander is able to send a seam pass through across to Soucy. Just all these little check marks for them that you can see the coaching staff has mentioned all these things in the past, and we just haven't seen it materialize together.
Sure.
Again, tonight, on a night where Anaheim looked a little tired, but you got to take advantage and you got to be the better team than they were.
Well, you mentioned Anaheim being a bit tired, and people are saying, well, it is the Anaheim Ducks. Fair, but the Anaheim Ducks have played better recently. We saw what happened when the Canucks played them on the road.
Yep.
They're only 4 points back of Vancouver.
They just rinsed Edmonton. I know yesterday, but.
But still.
Yeah.
So, and I get it, a second of a back to back, not a lot of juice in the second half of the game or whatever, but we can't sit here and talk about how Anaheim's a young, dangerous hockey team, and then when the Canucks beat them, be like, oh, it's just the Anaheim Ducks. Like,
no.
Let's be honest about it, right? But yes, it's the Anaheim Ducks. It's not like this world beater of a hockey team, but it's a team that gave the Canucks fits last time around, and they have been playing their best hockey for the past 20 games here.
If we're going to talk about having the level of urgency needed to go get to the playoffs and then go have success, it shouldn't matter who's on the other side. You've got to treat it as nameless and faceless and just go, hey, I've got to uphold my end of the bargain and go do whatever I can to knock this opponent over. Tonight, it happens to be Anaheim on a back-to-back, but from the mindset of the team and the players, it's me. I got to go execute what I have to do.
For sure, and what are some of the things we talked about, guys? Keeping that defensive discipline. I thought, you know, Anaheim, early on in this game, there are moments where they're eating pressure, but there are a couple of plays where they're trying to attack with speed. Vancouver did a good job of covering that up in the second period, right? Cutter Gauthier looked dangerous at times through the neutral zone, but they were able to not deny him. Troy Terry tried a couple of times. The gaps were great from Vancouver, so, you know, this is a young team that is dynamic. They are able to score off the rush, and Vancouver, you know, did an excellent job of maintaining that. There were a couple of plays in the third period as well. Tyler Myers on Vetrano in the corner. There was Marcus Pettersson on Troy Terry to the left of Kevin Lankinen. Like, these guys were trying to get to the middle of the ice, and those defensemen saying, not on my watch. That was an excellent job of protecting the middle of the ice.
It certainly was, and a player who's been helping out a lot with his speed and even mixing it up tonight, Drew O'Connor, who came over from Pittsburgh and signed a two-year extension with the Canucks, joins us now outside the Canucks locker room. And Drew, thanks for making some time for us here tonight. And, you know, you guys really needed this win here, and you guys were playing with a lot of urgency. How good did it feel to pull the win out tonight?
Yeah, we definitely needed that one. It felt great to win that. You know, obviously the road trip didn't go as we planned, but I thought we kind of played some good hockey over that stretch and didn't necessarily get rewarded. So it was great to be on the right side of it tonight.
Yeah, you guys were shot out of a cannon to start off this game. Was there a particular message coming from the coach or the leadership group tonight to say, hey, we got to start on time and we got to hit them early?
Yeah, I think we kind of knew we needed a sense of urgency, just kind of with where we're at in the standings and kind of all the teams that are in the mix right now. So It was important for us to have a good start. Obviously, they were on a back-to-back, so I think you want to get out early against a team like that. So I thought our start was great.
You have such a great first period as a team. You create all those shots and chances, and it doesn't go in. You find yourself down 1-0, and then three goals in the second where it's only seven shots. You know, what's sad or what's the thought in that first intermission to switch it so quickly like that?
Yeah, I think our mindset stayed positive. I think that was the key. It can be kind of discouraging when you have a period like that and you're on the wrong side of it. But I think we kind of just said we have to kind of stick with it, play the same way that we did in the first, and we'll get rewarded. It'll come eventually. And it did in the second.
Well, and as far as your game, too, I mean, you've been very successful with the Canucks here. Drive the net a lot, use your speed. What do you feel about the role you have here and the opportunity you have with this club?
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. You know, just trying to play to my strengths as much as I can, using my speed when I can. And, you know, I think it's been a good fit so far. So, obviously playing with some great players, which helps. But, yeah, just trying to, you know, do what I can to help.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, what you've been able to do here in Vancouver, of course, there's a certain style that the management team wants and the coach wants with the speed and straight lines. But, you know, you got to the middle of the ice. You created some problems for Anaheim today. The later you go into the season, obviously that real estate is at a minimum. How important is it just to hit that middle of the ice early in games and really lean on teams and create that space?
Yeah, I think it's important, and, you know, I'll try to do that when I can, but I think, you know, if you have someone kind of taking up that area, it kind of opens things up for other guys. So, you know, whether you're driving the net or just kind of hanging around the net, you know, it opens up some ice, and hopefully, you know, some guys can benefit from that. So I think it's important that we get everyone kind of playing that way. You know, like you said, it's not necessarily easy ice, but, you know, if you do gain that kind of space, it definitely helps.
A young player gets called up, and Jonathan Lekker-Mackey, you get to play alongside of him, have a nice little drop pass for him where he gets a couple of shots off. Just impressions on him.
Yeah, I think he's a great player. You know, I think he has a great release, and he kind of knows how to get into space to find ways to get his shot off. So, you know, I was definitely impressed with him. You know, I think he's a goal scorer, so he's going to score. He's just got to keep getting those shots off.
You know, before I let you go, you already went through your trade. You signed an extension. Is it nice having all that done ahead of Friday's deadline so you can just kind of relax a little bit here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's a relief for everyone once that date passes. You know, you don't want to see guys shipped out or whatever happens. But I think getting past that and then kind of knowing the group you have for the rest of the year and for the playoffs, it's kind of a good feeling. So it'll be nice when that day's passed.
Hey, Drew, great stuff tonight. Thanks for your time, and best of luck on Friday against the Wild.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is Drew O'Connor, Canucks forward, helping the Canucks win tonight. A big win for the Vancouver Canucks, who needed this one, right? Like, we talk about where they find themselves in the standings, and, you know, again, for all the stuff people saying, just the Anaheim Ducks. The Anaheim Ducks, coming into tonight's game, were only 4 points back of Vancouver with
9-3-1.
With as many wins. They have they had 27 wins coming into this game. The Canucks had 27 wins coming into this game. Now Vancouver has one more, but needed this one to create a little separation. It's now harder for Anaheim, six back, to get back to Vancouver. Had they won tonight, you're right there. You're 2 points back. You've given up your lead, and now you're really fighting it out. And the Canucks can't let up. You have a big one on Friday. They have a tough road trip coming up in a little bit when they go on the road out east all the way out to New York again.
Yep.
So it's not going to be easy. You can't underestimate how important the 2 points were tonight.
Yeah, and I think we got to put a little bit of respect on the Anaheim Ducks' name as well. This is not the team from the last couple of years. This is a very dynamic group. If you're looking at the next – maybe powerhouse or potentially a really strong team
it's
in the Pacific.
Building. Yeah.
This year is showing us that they've got some really, really good players. So this is not the same team from the last couple of years ago. But, guys, you know, 2 points is 2 points. It doesn't matter who you play. You could be playing, you know, anybody, the top team in the NHL. Vancouver's not in a situation now with 21 games left that you can take any points for granted. They didn't tonight. So this whole idea of level of competition, A, Anaheim's a pretty good team right now, and B, you need 2 points. You need to be up there with Calgary. You need to surpass them at some point. That is the goal for Vancouver heading into the final 21 games of the season. So they got the job done, and also they did not give a division rival and a team that's trying to inch into the wild card discussion a single point either, which is important.
And kind of an interesting night on the out-of-town scoreboard. A three-point night with St. Louis and L.A. playing in a shootout. St. Louis wins, so they kind of keep pace with Vancouver. But you slowly, as a couple of people have texted in, you creep closer to L.A. all of a sudden here.
Yeah, and, you know, that conversation that conversation around the L.A. Kings is going to be interesting because that's a team I watch for Friday. do they address their top six? Because I think Rob Blake's probably feeling a little bit of pressure. Mm. They made some significant, commitments over the last couple of years.
Yeah, report earlier today from Elliott that they're in the Rantanen sweepstakes.
Yep. So that's a team that's got to kind of look over their shoulder a little bit.
Yeah, and we'll see what the Canucks have in store for us as well coming up on Friday. Before we let you go, and we have a lot of reaction on this, it's Kent from Coquitlam texting in, David texted in, and others as well. Much better effort from Pettersson tonight. No point was pointless. Played with passion. A much better game and a good sign. Now let's follow it up with one sign, what text message says. And Kent says, monster face-off by Petey. Great game for him without a point and winning that last face-off with 5 seconds to go to salt the game away. That's a big one. So a lot of our listeners noticed Elias Pettersson tonight.
25 draws, he won 20 of them. You know, the numbers speak for themselves, but situationally, you're right. You know, winning that final draw of the game, really important. But what I liked about his game, and if I had to sum it up in one word, guys, decisive.
Yeah.
How often have we said that about Elias Pettersson this year? Not often, but he was not hanging onto the puck. He was either making passes really quickly or, you know, early on in this game, quick shots. One in the high slot, one in tight. That had a little bit of the sizzle taken off of it because there was an Anaheim stick there. But speed through the neutral zone as well. We saw it in the third period where he picked up the puck in his own zone and attacked through the neutral zone. That's a step in the right direction. It's one game. It's a good effort. I love the decisiveness. Now keep it going.
Oh, and I love the creativity our texters are using to describe Pettersson's game. Dave in North Burnaby. I think Petey must have got a new automatic transmission because there was no double clutching at all in his game tonight. And no, I don't mean he was shiftless.
Oh, hold Dave on. I wasn't North sure where you're going to go.
No,
on that.
No, I was careful. I didn't listen. And I saw this.
Given precedence, Sat, we got to be careful.
I get it. It's Brandon Poco says Drew O'Connor seems like a good mate, right, Sat?
There you go.
Yes, good mate. I know. And Bick, watch it. You know what I think of you. I said it the other night.
Right. Did you make the same mistake I made a couple years ago?
Did I?
Yes. Did
oh,
I ever?
Okay. I missed that. I heard the aftermath. And I felt
like, it was very. It was very light.
As long as I have company now, Sat, yeah. I'm happy. There's two of us.
Yeah, Randeep, great stuff, man. Always appreciate your time, and we look forward to chatting with you on Friday, and perhaps a new look team, depending on what the Canucks do by Friday's trade deadline.
We'll see, but we're going to be along for the ride, whatever happens, boys. 100%. Take care.
That is your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Hybrid with rates from 2.49%. Visit BC Honda. .ca. And as soon as we read some praise about Elias Pettersson's game, you had all the other people texting in too, and somebody says, hey, Sat, Pettersson's getting bought out soon, and Gary from North Shore says, stop it! We're praising Pettersson for a subpar performance game tonight. Trade him already. So you can't get a pass the people who are frustrated with them, but as we what we do on the post-game show, and we mentioned this last game, where there was so much negativity, I'm like, send in more positive thoughts. We read the thoughts that you send in, and the overwhelming thoughts the other night were very negative. The overwhelming thoughts in Elias Pettersson, at least so far to begin the post-game show, and it can always change, is overwhelmingly positive around Elias Pettersson. That's just the fact of how people are reacting to the game tonight on our feedback channels.
Yeah. Again, we talked about having like pride in the performance as a fan the other postgame show where you watch these and the effort didn't feel like it was there and yeah, okay, you might get a result, but you know, was the viewing experience satisfying whether they're on the road and you're watching at home or they're at home and you're here in Rogers Arena? Tonight was definitely a satisfying night because you could see the effort from them and you could see the tangible workmanlike attitude that you feel like you get paid off on the idea of like, hey, like fans understand when you lose, but they want to see the effort. You don't pay guaranteed for a result. You pay to see this team go out there and play to a certain standard, a certain effort you want to see. They had that tonight, and that's why there's going to be praise for Elias Pettersson, who had a pretty big game, even though it wasn't up there with an assist or a goal, but he ends up playing, I think it was 2047 tonight. 80% of the draw, as mentioned, as many people have texted in, 20 face-off wins up there with Crosby so far this season. I just looked it up. I think it's only happened 33 times in the Cap era where someone has won 20 face-offs. So you can still fact-check me on that, but I think in the Cap era, 33 times where someone's won 20 draws, and so Pettersson joins that group as number 34. That's a lot of games, a lot of centers trying to pull that off, and he did that tonight. And also, you know, I was going to bring this up later. I'll bring it up now. the offensive zone starts. It's something we've brought up before, but tonight Elias Pettersson got 8 or 9 at evens, which would put him near his highest for the season.
Yeah.
So if you want to start, if you're Rick Tocchet, that's an easy lever you can pull to get this guy in more offensive situations. Have him start in the offensive zone. Seems obvious enough.
Yeah.
And for the forwards across the league, like he's hovering in like the hundreds, 120 to 130 last time I checked, of offensive zone starts. He's way behind the McKinnons and McDavids of world, who are near the top of the list. So this is an easy thing for Rick Tocchet to do, get him out there, especially now that they need some offensive punch. Get him in the offensive zone more often.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Pettersson didn't score, but 20 faceoff wins, that's huge, is what one unsigned text says to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Keep those thoughts coming in. We get to more of them as the show goes on. It was a bit of a dicey one towards the end. Faraz says, after the Ducks made a 3-2, the naysayer in me said, it's done, we're heading to OT. I was pleasantly surprised to see the strong shift right after surrendering that goal. And that's Faraz texting in, and he's right. I don't disagree with him, too. Seemed a bit nervous, but the Canucks did a good job of salting it away after they made it 3-2. We'll get to more of your text messages here coming up in a moment. Let's take a phone call before we hit the break, and let's start things off in Deep Cove, where we have Mike on the line. Mike, buddy, what's going on? What are your thoughts here tonight after a 3-2 Canucks win?
What's going on, Sat?
Not much, man. You know, it's an up and down season.
You look pretty sharp in the intermission there, man.
Well, the cameras do a good job. Thanks.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts. You know, I thought, Petey had a strong game tonight with the 20 face-off wins. His defensive play was unreal, too. Like, he doesn't get enough credit for that. But also Garland, he had a great game, and I think he probably saw the highlights of Nyes fighting, you know, in the Leafs game, and he was like, you know what, I'm gonna throw down for those small guys. So, yeah, I hope you guys have a good night, and go Canucks, go.
Hey, appreciate it. Hey, thanks so much. That's Mike calling in. And Connor Garland, I mean, he got the chance. He fought Trevor Zegras late in the game as well. And I think Trevor Zegras should apologize for bruising Connor Garland's fist with his face.
Yeah, he could have drawn a lot of penalties. So I imagine that was also some frustration getting let out for Connor Garland tonight. I thought he could have drawn about 3 or 4 penalties tonight.
Yeah.
Ends up getting the late one, obviously, with a handful of minutes.
You know
left.
What? We'll talk more about that later because there's something you were telling me about.
I put on my Dan Riccio conspiracy.
I was going to say, so Conspiriccio is what Justin East Van calls him, and he has like a whole bit about it. So Bick Nizar was going down a conspiracy path right before Connor Garland drew that penalty. We'll explain what I mean by that.
I threw my Excel spreadsheets
yeah,
away. Like, I was literally working on it. I was like, hey, Sam, have you noticed this? And I was bringing it up, and then, yeah.
And he just threw it over into the crowd, and all these papers fell. People thought they were, like, throwing flags or something. It was Bick Nizar throwing a spreadsheet at people sitting down in the stands. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of it. We'll get to more of your phone calls as well. 604-280-0650, your toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. A big win for the Canucks at Rogers Arena, 3-2 over the Ducks. A lot more coming up on the post-game show. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sherwood behind the net. Nice play to protect the puck from Minchikov. Back to the left point for Forbert. Into the high slot. Got a shot away. It was blocked. Rolled wide of the net. Hoglander's got it at the left circle. There's a crowd of bodies in the crease. Soucy tries a one-timer right side. He scores! Gostal is arguing he was interfered with, but the signal was absolutely emphatic from referee Peter McDougall. Carson Soucy wires it into the back of the net, and it's 3-1 Canucks with 1:09 left in the second.
And that is Carson Soucy's third goal of the season as he shot it from the right-hand side, and there are two Canucks in the blue paint. Teddy Bluger got out, but Minchikov kept Kiefer Sherwood in there. First, he drove him into the crossbar, and then with his stick, keeps him in the blue paint as the shot goes in. from the right-hand side. I think this should be a good goal. I'm sure there's going to be a discussion here, Batch.
It was a good goal. Canucks go on to win 3-2 over the Anaheim Ducks at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of stuff going on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. I know fans are clamoring to get on the phone boards as well, so keep those thoughts coming in. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. There is a lot to dissect when it comes to what we saw here tonight. And honestly, like and I see it, Steve and Squamish texting, others texting and saying, hey, it's just the Anaheim Ducks. We'll see how they play against other teams. Absolutely. It all comes down to how you play other games and what you do. But at the same time, like, we evaluate the games that we see. And tonight, it was a strong performance. I know Anaheim played last night. Like, you can save all those takes. We all know. Like, we all saw the schedule. We all of us know, understand what happened. But how many games have we talked about this year when the Canucks play a tired team and they don't show up and the tired team comes in and beats them or they look lackluster? So for a game where they played one of their better, I thought, effort performances and executing their system, it wasn't the most convincing win because ultimately one goal against Anaheim and all that. But I thought they did so many more good things tonight than they typically do, and I think that's worth praising.
It's the type of output tonight that translates. They might go up against Dallas and lose. They might play Minnesota and lose. But if you play with this level, you're going to have a chance to win a lot of games in this league. And that's the thing. You've got to be able to uphold this standard now for the remaining 21 games. Bounces might go against you here on the rest of this homestand, whatever it is. And other teams have certainly, if Dallas plays at their best, okay, you're going to be outtasked at times. But it's this type of effort that you mentioned earlier. Like, they're not talented enough to be arrogant to have, oh, we'll figure out a way to win. You're not at that stage. And you got to play a certain committed performance that if you play with enough urgency and energy, you can get the bounces to go your way. And they have to do this the rest of the season.
Yeah, and Justin and East Van says it doesn't matter if you win by one goal or win by five goals. Winning is winning, and that is according to Dan Toretto.
Dan Toretto? How many nicknames does Reach have right now?
Conspiricio and...
Which does not roll off the tongue, by the way.
Conspiricio. It doesn't roll off the tongue, but it just hits well, though.
Yes. Conspiricio. It is great. When it was first pitched in the prep lounge, I was like, this is awesome.
No, it was good. I like it. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. This one here... Money Puck has Pettersson down for 4 O-zone starts, 5 D-zone and 4 O-zone. Don't give talk credit for Pettersson where it's not due, please.
So, I think there's some terminology here, and maybe I overstepped. I meant face-offs. So there's going to be some where he gets multiple face-off starts. If it's multiple face-offs on the same shift, like repeated icings, that's going to count as one start.
Right.
Whether as total face-offs in the offensive zone, he had way more than that.
He did. No, you're right. And I think that's a good explanation on it. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of them here as the show goes on. Let's go back to the phone board, and let's go to Newfoundland, where we have Andrew on the line. Andrew, always good hearing from you, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. 3:30 here in Newfoundland, so I'm going to be very tired in school tomorrow.
But you're the MVP,
definitely,
man.
It's worth it to watch a win. I try. I grew up in Vancouver. I live in Newfoundland now, and growing up in Vancouver, even as a kid, one of the things that would kind of drive me nuts about the fan base is how negative we are on our own players at times. And you had the Sedins back in the day, the Sisters, and they were soft or whatever. Luongo tried to jump in front of the SkyTrain and it went through his legs. Like, you'd hear it all from our own fans. And Elias Pettersson, I mean, I don't know if he got a good look at himself in the mirror recently or he had a good workout, but he really showed up tonight. He seems to have a different attitude. So to me, I've always believed in Pettersson. To me, it's pretty obvious that what he was going through was more so physical. At 26 years old, he's played hockey for probably, 20 years now? He's been in the league for 6 or 7. Like, I don't think this guy just forgets how to skate. I don't think this guy just forgets how to play hockey. I think whatever was going on with his knee either carried into this season or it just prohibited him from having a good offseason. So he did have a good game tonight. He was our best player. 20 face-off wins for a guy who's usually not the greatest on the draw. Great game for Pettersson. I have a lot of thoughts on this team, but I just want to sing Pettersson's praises tonight. I'm not saying he's back. I know it's one game. I know it's Anaheim, but I believe in Elias Pettersson. And if he's not back this year, I was ready to write him off for this year. But if he's not back this year, he's going to be back next year. I'm calling it right now. Elias Pettersson, point per game, 90 points at least. Thanks, gentlemen.
Hey, Andrew, love it, man. Hope you get some good sleep here and aren't too off the pace tomorrow. Appreciate it as always. But I like that. Some confidence. I mean, we haven't heard or seen this in a long time from our listeners, because it's been a lot of...
Well, certainly not about that player.
No, and that's what I'm saying, like, about that player. And it's fair, right? Like, he hasn't had the season he's supposed to have, and expectations are high. The team hasn't had the season it's supposed to have, and he's a big part of it, obviously. So all those things are fair, but it's a night, and maybe it's because the Canucks won, but the fan base, heard Andrew and many others, are a lot more positive about how EP40 performed.
Per natural stat trick, 81%. Total shot attempt share for Elias Pettersson, 90% shot on goal share, 92% expected goal share, and it's not a low number. It's he's that line pushed the tempo a little bit with scoring chances. He's credited with 13 on ice for 13 scoring chances, 0 against, 5 high dangers, 0 against. So yeah, that's a very positive night, and it's an ice tilt more than anything, that you can have an impact that way. Eric from Saskatchewan saying he impacted the game. That's what we're looking for. A lot of texts like that coming into the inbox, 650, 650, including Chase from Langley, super encouraged by Petey's performances, mentioning the scoring chances. That's what you pay superstars to do. Can't say he's back after one game, and the Ducks aren't great on the faceoff dot on the second night of a back-to-back. Just hope we keep seeing this moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. And the Canucks had such a good start to the game. Rafe says it's not done yet, but where the bleep was that type of first period all season? Now, to the Canucks' credit, they've scored the first goal quite a bit. This last little while hasn't really led to wins, and they did not score the first goal tonight. But the first 5 minutes of this game, they had like 2-3 high danger chances right off the bat.
They had 6 shots in the first 3 minutes.
They're on it right away. There's, you know, whether you want to call them high dangers or not, it's really up to you. But Garland hits it off the post. Besser gets robbed by an incredible save by Gibson, who reaches behind his back to
snare
the puck.
I still don't understand how the body did that.
Honestly, because I get kinks in my neck and like my back all the time. I felt pain in my upper neck when he made that move. Just like how I felt watching
it. I thought
it.
My eyes were deceiving me. I was like, did I just see what I just saw? And then you look at the replay, you're like, wow.
It was an incredible save and a snag, right?
And then Lekkerimäki had a shot off an entry from Hronek, where he was kind of the trailer, so he gets that one. Pettersson has a one-timer at the top of the zone. Like, they were very active to begin the game.
They were. And, you know, Anaheim got a bit of a lucky goal, right? They were completely not doing anything. They got a shot off, kind of bounced off, and goes in nonetheless, like whatever. And they take the 1-0 lead. But I loved how the Canucks came out on the second. Myers draws a penalty, and how they attacked right out of the gate, right? You saw even off the rush on the power play, that's how they end up scoring the goal to tie it up and just driving the net. And the starts to both periods were real key here for Vancouver tonight. Let's take another phone call here before we hit another break. I mean, game went long, so we have an hour to go. We are going to get to the thoughts the Canucks head coach as soon as it becomes available. We'll get you some player audio. We'll see if iMac can join us. That remains to be seen. We'll see if he can make it over. But let's go to Delta, where we have G on the line. G, thanks for calling in, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight? We lost G? All right, let's go to New. All right, so let's take a break. We'll come back and try to get the phone boards on the other side. 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox as well, 650-650. We'll get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. That's next after a 3-2 Canucks win on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Jake DeBrusque. In his office, he scored 18 goals in that area.
Now here's Besser, right wing to the Anaheim line, in front for DeBrusque, and alone, he scores! The Canucks strike off the rush on the power play. It's Jake DeBrusque with his team leading 22nd of the year to tie the game at one.
And DeBrusk's 10th power play goal of the season. And this starts in the Canucks zone. Heads up play by Filip Hronek, who makes a stretch pass to Brock Besser along the right-hand side. And Besser finds DeBrusk, who's making the drive down the middle. And a quick little snapshot, little wrister over the right shoulder, blocker side of John Gibson. Quick attack. And if you slow it down, if you try to attack the Anaheim Ducks with the pucks in front of them, it's going to be easy. Here, Filip Hronek recognizes that he can strike, and he does quickly. And DeBrusk finishes it off.
Filip Hronek sees some of his best hockey for when Quinn Hughes is out of the lineup. And got a big assist tonight on the Teddy Bluger goal. Canucks go on to win 3-2 over the Anaheim Ducks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Man, we have a lot of reaction on the text inbox. A lot of excitement and some trepidation. Now, Irfan from Maple Ridge is taking it the other way. He's saying, well, we don't know what the Canucks, they could be a better team by Friday if they add, so we can't say they can't beat Minnesota, they can't beat the Dallas Stars. Who knows what they look like after Friday? So we'll see. I mean, it's unlikely whoever they trade for on Friday can help them, because they're probably not playing on Friday, but I get the point that Irfan is making.
Got a ton of respect for that take. Irfan trying to compete out here.
I like
there
it.
There you go.
Yeah,
there
I like
you go.
It.
Although we may not see any acquisitions by Friday. Sorry,
yeah.
We may not see the acquisitions arrive in town
that's
by
what I'm
Friday.
Saying. You may
game.
Not see get
but nevertheless,
see the play. Yeah,
I agree.
So.
With I understand the sentiment.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I thought the Canucks did a lot of good things. And Filip Hronek, you heard the call coming in. He does play. He's played some of his best hockey without Quinn Hughes around. And you know, we don't need to make this about what happens when Quinn Hughes does return. But I understand people texting in and saying I don't want to see Quinn Hughes play with Hronek again, because Hronek is so good without Quinn Hughes. And you can make, you know, decisions later. But
valid.
Was terrific tonight. Again, like really led the way offensively for the Canucks from the back end.
Yeah, he was once again first star. Did he stay out to chat, or was it Bluger? Hronek chatted? All
he
right.
did chat. He didn't say much, go. But he chatted.
But nevertheless.
He had two assists tonight, primary assist and a secondary
assist.
He
did the on-ice interview, so shout out to Filip Hronek tonight. I thought he was probably the best player on the ice tonight. Obviously, Pettersson is getting a lot of compliments, but as far as impact with the scoreboard as well, and just a heads-up play on the DeBrusk goal, wasn't the most difficult passes, but needed to be recognized quick and executed. Gets it all the way up to Brock. With the Ducks changing, there was some space there, but a quick play there, and even on the Bluger goal, like it's his pass to get it up there. It just so often tonight he was transporting the puck, whether it's skating or an early quick pass. He was on it.
Yeah, I mean, he was. He had a great start to the game, great start to the second. Alex from Van says, can't recall another game this season where we've seen the team play a full 60. Great effort and deserve the win. Not having been able to say that in a while. That's Alex from Van texting in. We'll get to more of your texts coming up in a moment. Let's take a phone call here quick. Let's go to Dunbar, where we have Kieran on the line. Kieran, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight after a 3-2 Canucks win?
Oh, all I got to say, it was a great game. I was just coming back from it, and got to say, great, big fan of the show, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, rookie lab, here we go, yep.
I was just going to say, I thought that Elias Pettersson, had a great game, but I feel like third star is a bit high for the guy. I mean, I could name two guys off the top of my head that could take third star. I think Kevin Lankinen had a great game. Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling anxious at all, at least, with where Thatcher Demko's at. I think we're in good hands. And Connor Garland played like a dog on a bone today. That guy was getting in with Trevor Zegras at the end.
Yeah.
Good Lord, man. No, he was throwing all sorts of nails. I mean, I don't know. I'm a big Connor Garland fan, so that's all I got to say. I think that those were third star worthy performances. I think Pettersson's getting a lot of gruff, but he looked okay.
I hear you, man. Hey, appreciate the phone call, Kieran. That's good stuff, man. Call him back anytime. Always good to hear from fans who were just at the game as well. And I thought Lankinen was great. I know some people were somewhat critical of that, the rebound he kicked out on the second goal. But that's on Filipino. We can break the – I honestly don't know if we have time to break the goals down tonight because we're so limited on time this evening. But to me, if Filipino ties up his guy, that goal doesn't happen to begin with anyways. to me, that put that on. Like, the goalie kicks out a rebound. Dumoulin banks it in.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think... Yeah,
he's
think
also moving hard left to right to make the initial save on Lindstrom.
When he does make a great save. So, I mean, that's the one I saw people give him crap, or not crap for, but some criticism for. But I don't disagree with Kieran at all. I thought he was terrific between the pipes for the Canucks tonight, Kemo Lankinen.
Kieran also mentioned Connor Garland. Can I do my...
Yes.
Conspiracio?
Well, actually, no. You know what?
We'll wait till
save it, because we have to get to the coach, and all we're right. limited on time. Save it, but yeah, Conspibicchio. Conspibicchio does not work. Does
that
not
was
work.
Terrible. I prefer what you called me the other day than this one.
Don't tempt me. Although I don't think I can get afford to get suspended again.
No, I don't think you can do that.
I can't do that again. All right, we'll get to Bick's conspiracy. Bick Jones, we're calling him from now on. So we'll get to his conspiracy coming up in a little bit. But before we do that, let's get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick talking at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, what did you like most about the start in particular, even though you didn't score in the first period? It seemed like you dominated to begin the game.
Yeah, I thought we didn't get rewarded. I thought there was a lot of chances early. You know, you're hoping it's like 2-0. But, you know, hey, listen, they got that goal. I love the resolve. You know, we're in a state of mind. Sometimes we get a little bit down, but I thought the first period were really good. We had a lot of good chances. A
couple of goals off the rush for you with the power play goal by Jake and the even strength marker by Teddy. What did you like about that element of your game? And
yes, you know, speed to the neutral zone. You know, getting that puck in the middle with some speed. You know, getting some people in the net. Obviously, Jake's goal was big. That was a nice, you know, under the bar type of goal. What you're looking for, he can supply that for us.
A lot of the guys mentioned that the road trip obviously wasn't what you're looking for. How important is it to get that first win here for the homestand?
Well, it's you know, third period, right? You know, winning, you know, we on the road trip, we got to the third period and we didn't win those games, right? So we had some big moments tonight. Obviously, you know, I thought, you know, that second goal, it was preventable. But the saying that we hung on, it's not so much we hung on. I think they only had six. 5-on-5 chances. I think they had three, actually, 4-on-4 chances. And I thought, you know, when they have 16 shots, I thought we did a pretty good job. So you can't be too picky, but I think we sometimes you got to put your foot on a wounded snake. You know, you got to stamp it out. So I think that's our next level.
Really good nights in the dot for Teddy and Patterson as well.
Yeah.
And that big face-off win at the end. But what does it do when the team is winning that many draws? Like, how much of a difference does it actually make in the game?
Yeah, it's a big draw by Petey at the end. Teddy had obviously a good game for us, but well, it controls play, right? If you're losing a lot of draws, you know, a lot of things can happen, you know, like tip goals, you know, another tip goal. So, but yeah, I thought those guys did good on the dots tonight.
Rick, you got goals from a couple guys who don't always score tonight. What does it mean to get that kind of depth scoring throughout the lineup when some of your stars aren't quite going?
Depth scoring is huge. You know, we're a team that has to score by committee. Like, a lot of different guys have to contribute. You know, we don't have two or three guys that can fill the net. We need that depth scoring. You know, I think Teddy, I've liked his last couple of practices. You know, he was shooting pucks, he's moving his feet, and that was a nice play by Teddy to get us a goal. You know, you just get the puck to the net.
What are you thinking during the very extended review of Carson's goal?
Yeah, I was getting worried when it was long. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was a goal, and obviously they got it right. I know some of the refs talking to the refs this year, and they're saying it really has to be egregious for them to take goals away. They want goals to stand the NHL. So, you know, sure as he can get out of there. So I think it was the proper call.
I want to ask you about Petey. He's had a lot of attention the last few days. You always talk about moving his feet. He was talked about the faceoffs. I think he won 20 tonight. What did you see there? It looked like he was a little more engaged.
Yeah, I just thought his preparation last couple of days, I think I was telling you guys, I've liked his last couple of days. I like the fact that he owned up to some stuff to you guys, and it's just, hey, another good day for him. That was a good day, three good days for him. Like, you know, let's get some rest and have a good practice more. He's just got to go day to day. Don't worry about in the past. He's got, you know, one game's been knocked down. We got, 21 games left. He had a good game. That's it.
Defensively, you guys seem to transition the puck quite well. We don't necessarily see a ton of that without a guy like Hughes in the lineup. What did you like from your blue line in that regard?
Played faster, played more north. You know, I think there was a stretch when they were coming at us a little bit in the second. we were taking pucks back, and, you know, I got a little upset on the bench, but I don't like us taking pucks back. We're not that type of team. We have to play north, and when we play north, you get a transition game. So, yeah, and you don't have, you know, Huggy, obviously Hughes is a huge part of that. You know, he's a transporter. You know, it's tough to find those guys, and hopefully you get them back soon.
Rick, your team has had trouble closing games lately. Tonight you did the job. What was the difference tonight?
Well, I think when they were making presses, you know, we stayed in our defensive structure, but I still thought we were pressing. I told the guys after the second, you know, we were up 3-1. We don't want to dump pucks in. We don't want to just play flip pucks out and play cautious hockey. We want to play the game. And there's times when you have to, you know, get the puck in deep. Guys are tired. But I thought for the most part we were trying to make plays. You know, we still got to work on the power play. I think there's some stuff we have to work at. But there's some looks there that I like that we attacked. You know, we didn't just defer to getting rid of the puck. So that's kind of a start for our, you know, handling those third periods.
Given what you did in the third period, are you optimistic that your team can build on this and build some confidence now with the lead?
Yeah, you know what? I try not to get too high-low. But these guys here, we just got to, you know, obviously, hey, good win, but we just got to get back to work tomorrow. That's the way it is the next 6 weeks. You know, we have to, you know, we're in a race. We should be excited about this. I told you guys we should embrace this and have some fun with it. But tomorrow we have to work. We got some stuff we got to iron out. That's just the way we got to do it.
You mentioned wanting to see more from your power play. You've kind of had split units, if you will. The forwards that are your best scorers have been split across two separate units. Is there any reason why you're not putting, say, Pettersson, Besser, and Hedl all on the same unit?
Well, we have that. I think it's been stagnant. Actually, we scored tonight before the last game. I think we were like 30% after the last 10 games. So I actually, you know, he's doing a hell of a job with that. I think we're a little bit nervous. I thought we were a little nervous sometimes with it. And so there's some looks out there we're just not finding. That's something that we're trying to get these guys to understand. There's some looks that we're given. We want them to look for, and we're missing them. So I kind of actually, you know, I actually did load it up the last couple I told Yogi. So it's a work in progress.
At the end of the game, there's obviously some fisticuffs. There's some fight and grit from your players. Yeah. Do you like to see that? And were you kind of surprised that, say, Jacob Trouba did not get a third man in penalty for going into that fight?
I got to look at that. I honestly didn't see it. You know, obviously Gars had I thought Garland had a really good game for us, and you know, I thought it was pretty cool to see him in Zegras fight. I think it got the fans, you know, pumped up. I actually don't mind that. And it was, you know, Gars stuck up for the team and himself. Good for him.
Did he fight in AZ, Garland?
Did he fight what?
Did he fight when you had him in AZ? I
don't know if he fought. Maybe a couple of times. I think he has. Oh. I think he has. Yeah, he's scrapped a few times. Okay. Yeah.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And, you know, he was happy with how the team played. At the same time, mentioned there was some stuff they can iron out and do better. And on the power play, you know, it is a work in progress. But he did like what he saw from his team generally tonight, right? Like, he liked what he saw from Elias Pettersson, he talked about, but he talked about the urgency to play with. And for the most part, this is the type of performance that I think he's happy with. And obviously you want to build on it. And, you know, it's not a perfect performance, but a lot of good things happened tonight.
Yeah, certainly. And especially when pushing the message of embracing these 22 games, one game so far of that sample size, they embraced it. So for a coach, he can sleep easy tonight knowing that message resonated with the players, that they were able to match the situation and provide it with a certain level of urgency.
Yeah, and they brought it tonight. And on the power play, that's one spot where I've seen some people text in too and say a lot of good things, but one sore spot remains the power play. You know, they seem to be overthinking it too much, and I'm seeing that come in here on the text inbox.
Just really quickly, though, he did mention, and it was near the end of the second, called for a switch, and they loaded up the power play, which needs to happen. This breaking up of two units, they're already spread so thin with offensive firepower to break up these power plays and try to spread the wealth just isn't doing it for me.
I'm with you.
It just looked better as well, the back stretch as well. So the only one that we could maybe have a conversation about is should Heedle be out there instead of Garland, but at least it's DeBrusk, Pettersson, Hronek, Besser all out there. And when Hughes comes back, that one sorts itself out, but got to get your best five together.
I'm with you completely. Somebody texted in and said the power play sucked, but Chase from Langley says, I don't think you can ever win a cup, let alone a playoff series, with these wacky power play lines. I'm sorry, I love Garland, but he's not a power play threat, nor is Pugh Suter. Talk of the deployment of the power play continues to raise eyebrows, but to that point about how they loaded it up, that's what I want to see too. Put your best players out to let them figure it out. I know Pettersson's had his struggles, but I still feel better with him out there than some of the other things they've been trying out. And, you know, Pugh Suter's done a great job so far this year, so has Connor Garland, but they're not always threats. Garland had that good game on the power play a couple games ago, but it's kind of up and down. And I was chatting with Landon about this watching, and you want Pettersson to be more of a focal point on the power play, but he has to grab it by the reins too.
Mm-hmm.
When Garland's out there, he's so puck dominant, especially now with no Quinn Hughes. It's almost like too much at times. So I think they can simplify.
Now, I don't know if Filip Hedl on that is going to cure it either.
No,
but
and that's another guy. You know, somebody texted in and said on Filip Hedl. I want to bring this up here because I want to be fair about it because I don't want to.
Are we talking about the trade adrenaline one?
No, this one. Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, you have it.
Is Filip Hedl charm wearing out? He's still making great plays, but it seems like the trade adrenaline is gone. He's still very active with the puck and finds a way to get on the puck quite often here. I'll just bring up the total possession time, but I believe he was up over a minute. A minute 06 tonight for Filip Hedl. A little bit less than what he's done, but nevertheless, a good night possessing the puck. It does seem like sometimes he overdoes it and maybe he doesn't, or he looks off a pass and tries to do something else. So there's plenty to like, and I know there was a stat going around here recently of his carries and entries of how he's carrying it in and being successful at it.
Well, so he's been top of the league since being acquired by Vancouver on zone entries.
There you go. So again, there's plenty positive. But, yeah, I do think some of the shine has started to come off a little bit, and you're seeing more of that natural tweener 2-3 style player rather than, like, oh, that his first couple games were sparkling, and it looked like, hey, that's a top-six center. And I think now you're seeing a couple of the...
Well, I will say, like, a lot of things I'm seeing, I think he can be a top-six player still, like at least a second-line player. My biggest question is his best position center or is it going to be wing? Now, when it comes to the zone entries, when you watch him pick up a lot of pucks deep, that's what a center does. Plays deep, gets it, helps transport the puck. So him being center allows him to have more zone entries, have more touches, which is what you want. But considering how he can play direct and what a threat he can be, I still like what I'm seeing because I still look at him every night, and he's still every night one of the most dangerous Canuck players. And again, tonight, like by the numbers, they were good. He created some opportunities. There is a bit trying to do too much at times,
mm-hmm.
but considering how little these guys do, like I'm fine with it. I'll just take it. And even on the power play, you notice a couple times where the Canucks are so set on drop pass on the zone entry, and he just skates in. He's like, I see a lane, I take the lane. We don't see enough of that, so I get it. Some of it has worn off to that sense. He's not quite as dynamic as he was, you know, the first couple of games off the trade bounce, but I don't think we should look at it negatively at all. I think he's done a really good job in a lot of other facets, and I think maybe there was this excitement that he's going to be the star player right away, and that's what you have to, you know.
He looks so good.
You have to manage that. And again, like I thought he was playing out of his mind the first couple of games. A lot to be excited about, but you have to do it over a long period before you feel like this guy can be a next, you know, top line player. But I still saw a lot of good things from Filip Hedl tonight. Easily could have had another point or two on the evening. So I'm okay with how he's been playing so far, even though it's not as good as the first, say, four games he had in Vancouver.
Winds up being 3 shots on goal tonight for Filip Hedl. All of his attempts on goal as well.
Yeah. You know, if that's like a poor night, that's not so bad, right? Winning, you know, the differentials too, creating scoring chances, doing a bit of everything. So there are a lot of positives to what Filip Hedl has brought to the lineup. And you saw it as well with Drew O'Connor with the speed both these guys bring. And I'd say the Canucks can still stand to be a bit faster. They can always add a bit more speed to their roster, but those two guys have at least made a difference. And I think the big question is going to be, what did the Canucks do here ahead of the next game? Trade-wise. You know, they have some UFAs. what ends up happening here with Suter, what ends up happening with Forsberg and Brock Besser being the big one, and are they able, like Irfan was mentioning, to make additions to make their team better even ahead of the trade deadline? We know they're not going to be in the rental market necessarily, but it's going to be, if they can make their team better, it would be because they acquire somebody who fits in here long term.
But as we've detailed, like it's given the competitive nature of both conferences right now, there's not a lot of sellers. Like true blue, like, hey, we're ready to pack it in. Because you can find players on some of these teams, but what's the impetus of that team to want to make a move? I know a lot of fans text in about Josh Norris, and there's a friendship connection with Quinn Hughes. Ottawa's in a playoff spot right now.
Yeah.
What's their desire to want to make a move here?
So somebody threw this scenario by me today and said, what if you do Besser for Norris? So I was like, okay, made me think a little bit. I'm not sure that works out. But it's one of those, like, okay, is that something creative they look to do, something along those lines, right? Like, you know, I think we might see a lot of different things. Somebody asks us, what number would you like to see on Besser's contract to stay? We'll talk about that the other side. We'll talk about Bick Nizar's conspiracy around Connor Garland. I'm sure he'd love it as well. On the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It's Canuck Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
15 seconds left. Lacombe to center. Left wing for Carlson into the Vancouver zone. Driving wide on Myers, who poked the puck off his stick. Garland sends it around the glass all the way down. This will be icing, but how much time will the Ducks have left? As behind the play, Connor Garland eats a cross check to the face from Trevor Zegras, and they're going to drop the gloves. Zegras going after Garland on the end boards. Garland holding in there strong as Zegras pushes him against the glass. Garland comes around with the right hand. He landed an uppercut. We got another fight near side. Forsberg going after Lacombe, and then Trouba came in as the third man in, and Teddy Bluger comes to the defense of his outnumbered teammate Derek Forsberg as the Ducks come unglued.
You know, obviously Gars had I thought Garland had a really good game for us, and you know, that was, I thought it was pretty cool to see him in Zegras fight. That was, I think it got the fans, you know, pumped up. I actually don't mind that. And it was, you know, Gars stuck up for the team and himself. Good for him.
Breaking news, Rick Tocchet doesn't mind a fight. The man only had like 800 in his career or whatever, 5,000 penalty minutes. But yeah, I'm like surprised. I don't actually mind that. Really, Rick? That's the least surprising comment of the night. That is the Canucks head coach after a 3-2 Canucks victory over the Ducks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Sat and Big. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We will try to bring in Ian McIntyre into the combo if time permits. We'll see if he can make it over here on time. But without much further ado, Bick has been mulling over this conspiracy for quite some time. And
it's going to be so underwhelming. We've been teasing it for an hour.
I know. But hey, it is what it is. It's all in the tease, right? But as far as Connor Garland is concerned, a lot was made of Connor Garland's behavior and lawlessness and dirtiness after he held Connor McDavid at the end of a game, which led to a summit in Edmonton about ways to exact revenge on Connor Garland for a holding penalty. And I think they put a hit on him as well because he dared hold Connor McDavid. And a lot was made about it. Officials were asked about it. It became a big storyline. Should the league protect the Stars better? And it seems like Connor Garland became persona non grata with the officials.
I was just doing a, you know, tagging in into my Dan Riccio conspiracy love. Conspiriccio? How's it go?
It's Dan Conspiriccio.
Conspiriccio.
Conspiriccio. Okay.
So that game that we talked about where the holding at the end of the game and all that, that was game 45. And Connor Garland, like, if you're picturing him play, you know, he carries the puck, he draws players towards him, he's feisty along the boards, he draws a lot of penalties. So by game 45, he had drawn 21 penalties, which is good for about half a game, 0.47 a game, drawn penalties. The 16 games following that, till tonight, he's drawn 4, which is almost half that mark, which is a quarter, 0.25. And tonight, there was like three, four opportunities I thought officials could have raised their arm. And Garland's getting back to the bench looked like he was trying to say something to the officials as well. Now, he gets one really late. I was working on these stats, and then literally he cuts to the middle of the ice, draws this massive hooking call. I was like, all right, I guess I got to call that one.
And Bick looked at me and is like, I guess I got to throw these numbers away.
I guess we're not doing this now on the postgame show.
Oh, yes, we
But it's quite literally, like, it's significantly that. So it's four penalties drawn in the 16 games since then, but 21 in the 45 before then.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
But it's one of those things, right? Like, Garland deserved to be penalized. He wasn't. And then was there some overcompensation going on? It makes sense, some sense. He did draw a penalty tonight, but that's the conspiracy that Dick Nizar was working on. That
we're just facts only.
He's saying that Connor Garland was getting blackballed only by the officials because
I did not say that. I just provided facts that in the first 45 games, he drew 0.47 penalties a game. And since then, it's 0.25.
I know what conclusion you're leading us to with that with that statement, Dick. We know.
No, I trust. I'm not stealing the autonomy of the listeners. They can come up to their own decisions
right
on facts.
On this Conspiraccio thing, Roger and Kit says, how about Dan Riccio, as in reach, you're reaching?
Oh, I see you. Yeah.
Because he's always reaching for a new conspiracy. Or Dan Fictinio, because his theories are just a little too creative. Fictionio. Or Dan Speculio.
Oh, I like this.
It's all about speculation.
Sounds like Spicoli as well.
Yeah, it is. Or Tinfoil Dan, Roger and Kitts. I think Roger and Kitts has nailed all the variants of Dan Riccio's conspirators.
Speculio is pretty good.
Did you watch?
Fast Times? Yeah.
No. Now I messed up the name on it. It's that show, the Marvel show, with
no, WandaVision.
No. Oh, man, it's like on the tip of my tongue, and I just...
Daredevil? Let's throw out names.
No.
Dan Daredevil Riccio. That's what we call him in the office.
I can't do it. I can't do it. Yeah, I mean...
Marvel TV show?
Yeah, it's a Marvel show.
Loki?
Loki, there we go. Loki,
oh, actually
right?
Got it right?
You did, Loki. Right, because it's like different variants, right? So I'm like different variants of Dan Riccio. It ruined the joke because it took me forever to come up with this. So
yeah,
I'm just
Loki,
that
was terrible.
That was really bad. Yeah, listen, not everyone's going to be a winner. That's why you got to shoot, right? You got to get a lot of shots up. Maybe some of them hit, some of them don't. All right, what else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Bick?
650, 650.
So stupid.
Are you... Well done on the Riccio text coming in here. A true conspiraccio usually starts with, so I was at the Olive Garden, gnawing on a breadstick, and then I realized. So good.
This one says, Dan Riccio, because he's always reaching to try to see over the counter at Subway.
Come on, guys.
It's just, Tyler, that's just offside, man.
Come on, man. All right, 650.
All right, so the question, we had a question before.
I'd like to hear what you think Brock's contract should look like to stay.
All right, so as far as Brock's contract is concerned, we know that he's looking for 6 years, right? And the report's out there that the Canucks had offered a five-year deal worth $8 million per season, so about $40 million in total money. I wonder if you made him an offer of 7.5 or 7.65, which is exactly $1 million more than what he's getting paid now over 6 years, if he says no to that. That's about $45.5 million, roughly. Talking about $45 to $46 million. That to me is like, what does a deal look like for him to stay?
Yeah.
To me, that's like the low bar. If they get him signed to lower than that, I think that's like a massive coup. But that's kind of what I'm looking at. And are the Canucks even prepared to go to that level? That's ultimately going to be the question.
Yeah, it just, you know, we saw the report earlier this week about earlier in the season, $40 million total money, 5x8. It just feels so light for someone who's been as productive as Brock has been in his career. And like we've mentioned the $9 million mark, and is it $60 million total? Like, that's on the high end. But guess what, man? Free agents get money. Like, that's how it works.
Yeah.
It just feels like a big gap from $60-plus million, which he could make based on his numbers, to what we're talking about with $45 million. It's if he signs a deal, like, I'm very skeptical. Like, I just think it's like financially crazy to be that loyal. Like, I'm pro loyalty and all these things.
So, what do you think?
It just feels like he's caving on a lot of money.
So if he signs for $46 million, how much do you think he's leaving on the table? Like, realistically, like, do you really think he's gonna get offered a 7-year deal at $8 million per year on free agency?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he is. Like, I'm not sure he's going to get that. Like, I know he's going to get paid, but I'm not sure if 55 or 56 million is in the cards. I think about 50. I think that's where it's at. Like, I think it's about 48 to 50. So if he's leaving 3 to 4 to 5, I can see that being the case. We'll see what happens. Like, part of me wants to see him go to free agency because I'm so curious to see what he's going to get paid,
100%.
Right? But, like, I've been asking around, and that doesn't mean – because all it takes is one team, right? And you never know when you get to free agency and what happens in the playoffs. Things can really change. But as we stand and sit here today, like, I'm not sure – like, I could see somebody offering him 7x7. I can see somebody offering him 7 and a bit over 6. Like, I don't know if he's getting
– I just think with the way the free agent class is going to be looking, and there's 32 teams – cap's going up, like, the money's just going to be there. Yeah. And, like, he is productive. Like, you can't ignore that.
I mean, I thought he played well tonight. You know, like, for all this talk about Brock Besser not skating well, being slow, like, tonight he skated well. Tonight he was being assertive. Tonight he was a bit of a driver. Like, he really was. I thought a lot of the stuff that happened on that line and a lot of their chances happened with Brock Besser being involved and doing a lot of the positive things on it. So I liked a lot of what I saw from Besser tonight. Can he do that more consistently? That's going to be the question. My biggest question, you know, the question was, what could a contract look like if he stays?
That would be the number to me.
Right. But is he going to stay? And are the Canucks going to keep him because do they see a fit here long term? Now, they might be more willing to let this play out, and maybe they acquire a center, and then they see how it works out with Besser, and then they can figure out Besser at the end of the season. Like, I think that's something that could happen here if they are fortunate enough to find that winger or to find that forward or center they really want to find by Friday, and then you have some time and more runway to see if it works with Besser. But what's the fit with Besser here? Tonight looked good with Suter. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time.
But that's not a long-term solution.
Because we know Suter's probably not going to be here long-term. So where is he going to play? Is it as simple as if Pettersson regains his game, can he just slide and slot next to him?
I don't know. Because even when Pettersson has been going in seasons past, like the lotto line idea like hasn't worked in years. Years! And so now, okay, Miller's out of the equation. Like, I guess you could do that, but... I don't know. I don't know if I've seen enough, like, active returns to want to lean back into that.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
This one is unsigned. Dan Capio. That's really good.
Capio.
I can't. Okay, Brandon Impoco is really tempting me with this
one. No, we can't. We can't read that one.
No?
No.
You don't think I should try it?
No. Do not try that.
I wanted to try it, but maybe I shouldn't. All right.
All right. What else are we going to get to here?
Dean and Delta says 24.5 goals per year in the last 5 years, minus 19 this year, 4 goals in 2025. Trade him for something now. He's not worth more than what he's offered. In fact, he is a $6 million player now. That's Dean and Delta texting in. So, I mean, you have a variety of different opinions on it, on where Besser finds himself, but, you know, that's going to be the big one for the Canucks ahead of Friday's deadline. And, you know, with Pugh Suter, that's going to be the other one. Derek Forbort, to me, is like the easiest one to move.
That one's feels automatic.
Right, because you have Soucy, who you could still move if you wanted to. If not, you can figure that out on the offseason. You have DPD, who I thought had a pretty solid game tonight. I liked a lot of what DPD had.
Took a big block off of the right knee.
He battled. He left the game, had to be helped down the tunnel. It looked really rough. You're like, oh, man, is this guy, you know, done for the game? And then he came back, and he battled, and he brought a lot of positives. And, you know, I like what I saw from Lekkomäki. And considering where the Canucks find themselves right now, like, I'm fine with these guys getting some experience and getting a chance to play. So I think Derek Forbort's the easy one to move as long as there's a market there for him. And if Vinny Desharnais is going for a fifth-round pick, which he did today to the San Jose Sharks, I'd imagine you'd be able to get something similar at
a
the very
future early. Fifth on top of that.
Yeah,
right?
Like
2028.
28. So I'm sure you can get something along the same lines, maybe slightly better for Derek Forbort too. So I think he's an easy one if the Canucks choose to go down that path.
Ends up being 13 minutes for Elias Pettersson on the back end today. We had a couple of texts. What did you think about Lekkomäki as well? I thought it was a pretty encouraging game for him.
Yeah, had a nice shot in the first period. I like how he changes the angle on his shot. I like how he attacks. And I saw him going to the inside a lot more tonight. I like generally what I saw from Lekkomäki.
The play really stood out to me. It was on the first power play. Or the Strome power play. I can't remember if that was the first one. In the first period, he takes a shot below the dots, and it's on the short side. Gibson turns it away, no problem. But it goes behind the net, and Brett Leeson is the one that collapses on it. Brett Leeson, 6'5", 220.
Yeah.
Lekkomäki is listed 165-510. Lekkomäki is able to win that play, disrupt it enough, poke it away, and that play stays alive in the offensive zone because of his work against someone significantly bigger than him. So that's the one that stood out to me tonight, on top of getting to the right spots, being available for a pass. Hedl tried making a play from below the net, behind the net, out front, and you could just see the little subtle shift of, hey, I got to get to this space. Can Hedl hit me? And he just misses it. But you could just see he's got offensive instincts of how to play off of the puck. And it's just a matter of, can he get it? Can he rip it? And we know he can shoot it. And he was not shy tonight either, which is what you want to see. 4 shot attempts tonight from Jonathan Lekkomäki, 3 of them on the net.
Yeah, and there are a lot of things that he can do and provide. And like I was mentioning before, I want to see him get the run here the rest of the season. Even if he has his struggles, if he gets healthy, scratch the game, or has to go through some tough lessons, I'm okay with that here because he's already had success at the AHL level. He's had a good season so far. And I see the value in him playing the final 21 games here, or make it 22 including tonight, or if it's 20 of these games, and to prepare him for next season. And I think it's an opportunity here because the stakes are high. Canucks are trying to make the playoffs, but they're not in a position where they're such a big contender that, you know, he's going to mess it up. Just ride with the kid.
Yeah.
See what he can do. And this is the best way to set him up for success next season.
And this time, maybe a bit earlier, but we had the Four Nations break, but February to March is, we always say in the offseason, well, if you season him in the AHL, give him 40, 50 games, and then back half of the year, you call this guy up. This is supposed to be that time now. And yeah, they're in a playoff chase, and it's tough, but you're meant to go through all the things in the regular season down in the A to step in and feel the spark of what it is at the NHL level. So hopefully he continues to build on a pretty decent night tonight from Lekkomäki. Again, mentioned the shot attempts, ends up being just 10-10, but it was a noticeable 10-10 from him.
Yeah, it was some pretty good stuff from the young players, and the Canucks, a solid effort tonight in a 3-2 win over the Anaheim Ducks. And to break it all down, to look ahead to Friday, and to bring the sage takes like he always does, it's time to bring in the man we call the Triple Threat. You watch him on TV, read him on digital, and you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Sage takes.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah?
I'm going to put that in my next rap.
That'll be the next diss track, Ian McIntyre.
I've decided, well, this is really my wife who came up with it, that if I ever were to go into hip-hop, I'm using Tai Chi and Chai Tea in the same lyric. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but they're going to be together.
That's pretty good.
Tai Chi. I had some Chai Tea after my... No,
I'm going to hit you with some Tai Chi and serve up some, was it, Chi?
You know what, Sam? I'll figure it out, okay? Yeah. I don't need your help.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, with rap, you might, but not
I'll be
with
talking
words.
To Bick later about it.
Just leave the lyricist alone, all right? He's a quadruple threat by the end of the year.
You know what? I've thought about doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't write music, but I could write lyrics.
Yeah. Do some lyrics.
I'm not
bars.
Sure about hip-hop.
You could be on the Super Bowl halftime show real fast.
I don't think I have the street cred for that.
You can do a country song. I mean, because country and hip-hop aren't too dissimilar. It's just one's...
Guys, this was a good game
more.
Tonight. What are we doing here?
All right.
We don't need to delay.
All right. Straight to the game. How good was this game tonight from the Vancouver Canucks?
I thought they were pretty good. I thought they were under the circumstances. It was the kind of game, the kind of response they had to have after a pretty dismal road trip, and the way that they just faded in some of those games was alarming given you know what was at stake. And of course the guy that we're all talking about, because how could you not, was Elias Pettersson. I thought tonight he was very good. It was interesting, first shift he knocked over Killorn along the boards. He had I think 5 hits in the game, which is probably the most he's ever had in an NHL game, and of course was great on faceoffs, and you know, didn't get on the score sheet, but generally looked like a $92.8 million player trying to lead his team, doing everything he could to lead his team. And that's, I think, all that Rick Tocchet is asking for. I mean, there's a lot of fine detail that he's demanding as well. But big picture, he just wants Pettersson to get out there and lead and work. And you know, be the guy who makes a difference. And tonight he didn't get on the scoreboard, but he made a difference. I thought there was a lot of other good boxes that they checked, how little they gave up, how much better they were coping with the Ducks' speed and rush game than they were last Thursday down in Anaheim. I thought Lekkerimäki looks like a more complete player now than he did when he was last here. I mean, obviously, he's good with the puck and gets his shot away quickly and has a shoot-first mentality, which this team desperately needs. But it was, you know, how involved he was in staying on pucks and getting to pucks and battling. He even used his body a couple of times. So I thought that was impressive. I thought Filip Ronek, this was maybe his best game of the year. Certainly his best game of the year without Hughes. I think Ronek's, as I tweeted, I think he's had a good season. I just was a little disappointed. I think I said this on one of our post-game shows because there's so many of them.
Yes.
Sometimes it feels like there's 82 of them.
Yeah. Plus the Sage takes get lost amongst all the other ones.
The Sage takes get lost among all the other crap, I say. But I think that Filip Ronek's had a good season, but one of his you could criticize him for not elevating his game when Hughes has been out, for not showing that he can be the guy on occasion. I thought tonight he was exceptional, especially, you know, first half of the game. You know, I thought that Brock was unlucky not to score a couple of times. He played well. So there was a lot to like. But let's remember, this is one game against a team behind them in the standings who played last night. They need 21 more of these. They're not going to obviously get 21 more wins, although, you know, 12 or 14 would be nice. That would stand them well in the race. But they need this kind of engagement and directness and defensive soundness. They need the special teams that they had tonight. They only got one on the power play. Maybe they could have had more, but they got the one on the power play, didn't give up anything while shorthanded. It's kind of a game that I think they would take 21 more of these.
Elias Pettersson did have a 9-hit night last season against Toronto. That may have been favorable in the scorekeepers, but nevertheless.
That hits probably the most inaccurate stats.
I'm just reading you the stats. I'm just facts only here. His 5 is the other.
No wonder the National Hockey League reformed that stat this season with that kind of nonsense.
Doing the audits on it here.
Yes. So imagine, like, which Kiefer sure would have had, like, 1,000 hits by now then?
There was a playoff game a few years ago, and I can't remember. I was covering it. I should remember. So maybe it was St. Louis, Vegas in a conference final. Were they? They were in a conference final. St. Louis, Vegas. Whatever.
Sounds like it.
Well, obviously the story's petering out already. But there was something like 95 hits in the game, and one of the coaches said, "If that was real,
I remember that,
nobody would have survived."
Yeah.
Like if you had
95 hits, yeah. Well, I mean, the way the stat is kept, because it's technically separating the man from the, you know, from the puck, right? Like, if it doesn't do that. But anyways, on the trade deadline, which is a couple of days away as well. And
I understand.
Yeah, it seems like it's not moving this year. It's staying where it's supposed to be. Do you have any sense of what the Canucks will actually end up doing? Because I think we all know they have a lot of balls in the air. They would like to do a number of different things. And I could see a deadline where they do like 4 or 5 trades or they do nothing. And I don't think it's ridiculous to say that because that's just the nature of where they find themselves.
Yeah, I would think their default position, everything being equal, is they don't want to lose players for nothing. And especially this season. Last year, they were willing to risk that, and that's what occurred. They re-signed neither Lindholm or Zadorov, although they tried. Those guys eventually just chose to play in Boston instead. But the Canucks spent a ton of assets to get them, and were left at the end of the year with nothing. But that was a team that was on its way to winning the Pacific Division, and it turned out went to Game 7 of the second round. So, you know, the risk was worth the investment. The reward, I guess, was worth what they paid. This season, it's different. You know, who knows where they're going to finish. So ordinarily, a year like this, you don't want to lose assets for nothing. But I think, to your point, Sat, I don't necessarily think they're not going to re-sign. Or I, let me put it this way. Right now, it doesn't look like they're going to re-sign Besser, but it's still a distinct possibility that they will. You know what the odds are? Is it 1/3? Is it 40%? Is it 10%? I can't say that, but they're still talking. And anytime you have a player who wants to stay and a team that's interested enough in having him stay, that they're involved in negotiations, serious negotiations, there's a chance that problem can be solved. I'd like to think that even though it's been even quieter on the Suter contract front than it has been on the Besser front, that they'll find a way to at least, you know, make an offer and try to keep him, because is he not what you would want in a third line center? Maybe if you're going to win a cup, maybe you'd like a guy in third line with more offense. Last year we saw that they had Lindholm essentially as a third line center, but you know, Suter has done really well for this team, and he seems to be that one of those guys who's got a full toolbox. You know, there's so many players in this league who, you know, have a tool here or there. But they got no toolbox, nothing to gather them and make them a complete player. He's a complete player in a very low-key way. And so I'd like to see them try to keep him. But I think, you know, if they get strong offers, it's going to be really hard for Patrick Alvin to say no. But I also know, having spoken to him on the weekend in Seattle, the GM, that he wants this team to make the playoffs. And he also acknowledges there's been crazy, and that's not his word, it's mine, crazy stuff has happened this year. Things that were unforeseen and nobody necessarily could have planned for. And so that, you know, I think cuts the team a little bit of slack. It's not just a grotesquely underperforming team. There's no reason for it. These guys have all let management down. That's not the case. There's been a lot of reasons to it. Some guys have let them down. Mm-hmm. But so I think he knows that if they make trades this week, they still need to have something coming back. Like, you can't gut the team and say, well, go ahead and play the final 21 and still be a playoff team. You can't do that. I don't think that's necessarily what they would be doing anyways. I know they want to kind of retool, improve the team on the fly. So presumably that means if they're going to make trades, they're going to kind of look more like regular hockey trades than just a deadline sell-off or deadline rentals. So we'll see. It's awfully interesting. I think it's been a long time since there was this much ambiguity about you know, what might happen with this team. Because you could have that they could stand pat, or they could fully sell off. And in either case, you can make an argument to justify it and why they did that. So it's going to be an interesting couple of days here.
Before I let you go, Mike in Victoria cites a Snoop Dogg and Wedding Cake song where they incorporate chai tea into it. Not
chai tea and tai chi.
I gotta look it over, but there might be something there. But
because it's the, you know, you need them both.
You need them both. It can't just be the one. You need them both.
Them both in the same line, lyric.
We'll take a look at it, see if we can find it. But
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg. I mean, yeah. That was his vocation, I suppose, and he would know. But Ian, great stuff as always. I mean, super late night tonight, and you know what? Thank you for making some time for us and coming over. I know it
wasn't
easy.
Sure, it was touch and go.
I know it was. We weren't sure if you were going able to.
7:40 start and almost a 3-hour game.
I know we're almost at midnight too now. So thank you everybody for listening, participating.
I think we should go past midnight.
You think so?
Are you guys on?
Hard pass.
Vic's about to go to bed.
We got a long week.
I just said that to be difficult.
Yeah. He wants to get
could
home
rag
too.
The puck for 2 more minutes.
I know you can, but you know what? We'll leave the fans
do
wanting
a freestyle.
More.
Josh, drop a beat.
So it's beatboxing. But yeah, so we'll save the good stuff for Friday because the Canucks have the Minnesota Wild, and we'll talk about what did or didn't happen at the deadline on Friday as well. And I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca. A great piece on Brock Besser today. Great chat with Patrick Alvin too. So all your Canucks content, go and check it out on Ian McIntyre's page on sportsnet.ca. And Bick, I'll maybe see you tomorrow. I might be from home, but we'll see.
Oh.
Yeah. And Josh Elliott Wolf. Yeah, I might work from home tomorrow. I'm letting you know now.
Before the deadline.
We'll let you know.
Come
yeah.
On.
We'll see how it goes. Thank you all for listening and participating. It's a pleasure as always. I'm Satyar Shah. He's Bick Nizar. Thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. Thanks to Josh Elliott Wolf for listening to the Canucks Under Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas League Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.